Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Here's a question for you. Is all art acceptable, or are some artists pulling our leg with what they enter into galleries or indeed put forward for competition prizes? The likes of the Turner Prize, so on and so forth. I'm looking at a piece of art which has to be one of the most bizarre things I've ever looked at. Let me speak to Malachy O'Doherty with this. Malachy, good morning.
Morning, Frank.
Art,
how are you doing?
I'm good. The beauty, I suppose, is in the eye of whoever's looking at it. But this is a young Scottish artist who has presented a Ford Escort. This is a full car, full Ford Escort, and a doily on the roof of it, a very large doily, like a lace type placemat.
What colour is the Ford Escort now?
And the Ford Escort is red, and the doily is white, the same as you'd see on your granny's table. If you went round for a posh tea, there'd be the lace doily. But the one that she's put across the roof of the car is huge. Obviously, she's made it specially. But it's just a doily on top of a Ford Escort, and she says it depicts her childhood. I suppose in many ways it'd be like me putting a bale of hay on top of a Toyota Corolla. You know, it's just a message in it, but like, it's not art, is it?
Or I could put a typewriter on top of a Morris Minor.
Yeah, yeah. We could all put something on top of an old car that we once had.
But she did it first, Frank. She broke the mold.
And does that make it like desirable?
Well, you used a word which was a judgmental word. You said beauty is in the eye of the beholder, and your presumption, therefore, is that this is an attempt at making something beautiful. And it may not have been in the mind of the artist at all that this should be beautiful. You know, not every artist is trying to create beauty. Not every artist wants to do landscapes of Donegal, you know, or take photographs of glorious golden sunsets. You know, she's up to something. You know, I'm not in a position to say what it is she's up to, but presumably she's got some notion of what she's at. Are you suggesting that the whole thing is entirely fraudulent, that the art world has kind of become a great con where you just do any old daft thing and somebody will pay a load of money for it?
Well, I did feel like that about abstract painting, where you'd get a big stroke of a pen or a paintbrush, you know, along the whatever you paint on. What's that called? Easel comes to mind. The canvas is the word I'm looking for. So you put the paint on the canvas, and it doesn't look like anything other than a lot of colours. I think that's a bit of a bluff, but a lot of people love it.
But it might fit within a tradition of something. I remember talking to my old friend Joe McWilliams, the lost great artist. So we were talking about a painting in his gallery up in the Cahill Road, and he asked me what I thought of it. And I said, well, I don't like the way the brush stroke shows up the hairs of the brush, and I don't like the way the wet paint has dribbled down the front of the canvas. And, you know, I thought those things should have been tidied up. And he said, do you really think that? He was mystified almost, because he was so familiar and so acquainted with the thinking within the art world, that he was surprised that I saw these as flaws, you know, because if I had done a painting and some of the wet paint had dribbled down the front of it, not that I ever did any painting, but I would have thought the proper thing to do would have been to clean it up. But he said that there was something about seeing the artist's process that was of value in the work itself. To tell you the truth, Frank, I haven't a clue about this. I haven't a clue about conceptual art or abstract art. I've been down to Anna McCarrig, and I've seen abstract artists at work, and I've sat with them, and you look at a painting, and you feel that you're supposed to comment on it. You feel you're supposed to say, well, that tells me this or that, you know. And I remember one of them saying to me, no. If you actually put into words what your response is, then you're diminishing the work itself, you know, that you're putting it in quotation marks almost. Your response has to be non-verbal for a start, you know, because you can't translate or paraphrase a work of art. Your response is in your own heart, and that's it. And that bewilders me. I find, as a writer and as somebody who loves language, I find it bewildering that I'm expected to appreciate something without saying what I feel about it, you know. And I was in July, I was over in Strasbourg, and I went into a gallery there, but I do love going into galleries. And the whole major floor space was taken up with one exhibit. And the exhibit, again, was a red car. You reminded me of it, basically. But it was a red car that had either been through a crash or had been battered to bits to make it look like it had been through a crash. But there it was, a red car in the middle of this beautiful, ornate marble floor space. And it was just like a car that had crashed and rolled over into a ditch and been pulled out and put in an art gallery. And I'm thinking, well, and I did stop and look at it. And but if I'd seen it in a ditch, I would have stopped and looked at it. and I was wondering, what's it doing in a gallery? Because if you were walking along anywhere and saw a car in that condition, you'd stop and look at it. And you'd ask, oh, God, I wonder, was anybody hurt or were people killed there or whatever, you know?
But see, when I go into a gallery or when I go into a shop that's selling paintings, yeah, I'm always looking for the skill. I'm looking for something that I couldn't do in a million years, and I stand back in awe of what people can create, and I'm just amazed by their ability. If I'm looking at a painting, and alongside it, and I don't mean to be flippant about this, but alongside it could have been a painting done by a 7-year-old, when there isn't very much difference in the use of the paint. And I don't know which one comes from the famous artist and which one comes from the 7-year-old. I don't see any skill in that.
You know, and I remember, and I'm back to the conversations with Joe, I remember once we were talking about a work of art that he had impressed, and what had impressed him was this kind of wooden frame with bolts at the corners and whatever. I don't remember what it was, but that was the kind of thing he was describing. And he says that that was the thing he liked best about that work. And then he discovered it wasn't the artist who'd made that work. The artist had come up with the idea and commissioned somebody else to make this frame with the bolts in the corner. And it's very possible. I mean, the artist with the car and the doily certainly didn't make the car. And maybe didn't even make the doily. Maybe just thought, oh, it would be great if we had a Ford Escort with a doily on the roof and hired somebody else, or a whole team of people, to crochet a giant doily.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, because that's you know, because it's the idea that they had that is the conception, and the realization of it is something you can delegate to somebody else, you know.
One of the reasons we're talking about this is the Turner Prize has attracted only 30 grand in sponsorship, and this is raising serious concern about the level of interest in what is a long-standing contemporary art award. And we've had some incredibly famous pieces that have won the Turner Prize that stick in our minds because they're famous, as opposed to because they were incredibly brilliant. I don't like being fooled, you know what I mean? I would love to have, you know, to buy a portrait of someone and it's perfectly painted and it's a famous person and it's hanging on a wall and it's the only one done. Or even to buy some of the work, I'm just picking an artist at random here, like Terry Bradley, you know, where he's got a theme and it's incredibly creative, those women's faces that he does, or the dockers or whatever. There's just something skillful in his creativity. I'm always looking for the skill.
Well, you're looking for someone who'll hang on the wall. Do you watch Portrait Artist of the Year?
Yeah, I have to say it's always on in our house. My wife is an art teacher, and she loves that program and watches it and analyzes it.
And I mean, people do flex the reality. I was watching it last night, and there was a character sitting, and there were these kind of red diamond shapes patterns on the wall behind her. And one of the artists thought, I would prefer them to be green. So paints the diamond shapes as green instead of red. So moving away from the idea that the job of the artist is to reproduce what's exactly in front of you. and that's fine. That's okay. But I mean, the art of the Turner Prize is not about something that Frank Mitchell is going to buy and take home and put in his wall.
Mm.
I'll tell you another thing. I was down in Dublin and I went into a gallery because they had an exhibition coming up of Troubles memorabilia, and I was just curious to know what little items I might have about the house might be worth, because I've kept a few things. That another subject for another day. But the guy that I was talking to, me told me an interesting thing. He says, people sometimes buy a painting for the price, you know? They want to have a painting over the fireplace that cost 100,000 euro because they want to have people into the house for a wee glass of wine, a bit of dinner, and show them the picture that cost 100,000 euro. And if the exact same paper picture had only cost 10,000 euro, they wouldn't have bought it. And I thought, this is hilarious, you know. But this is, you know, this isn't, the art market is a very, very funny thing, you know. It's you know, I can't get my head around it. I don't understand why people would pay huge sums of money. I mean, why pay, I know something up the other day, a Klimt, that's been just discovered, and I can't remember the price, but the price for this Klimt was, you know, within the millions, you know, and the speculation was that it would actually have gone higher, you know. And, you know, I don't know why people want to own the original when you could get a very decent reproduction or a poster made, you know, that you could hang it on. Mind you, and you started me off talking, we do have some nice paintings around the house. There's I have a wee Colin Davidson. Did I tell you about this before? I was walking through, there's a wee art exhibition. The UTV building used to be fantastic for artwork.
Yeah.
Do you remember but the BBC took that up a bit as well, and they had a corridor where they used as an exhibition space. And there was one piece that struck me every time I walked past it, and it was Colin Davidson, and it was a picture of, it was basically just in black and green, two colours, and it was a nun, you know, saying her, using her beads, you know, saying her rosary. That's all it was, in a very large black frame around it, but a small piece. And I just took to that, and I thought, I love that, I would love to buy that. And I couldn't afford it. It was only £125, you know. And I was talking to Tony McCauley there, and Tony says, well, why don't you contact Colin Davidson and ask him if he'd take installments for it? So I did. I said, would you take £25 a month for it? And he agreed. And we're going back more than 20-odd years now, you know. And so I paid Colin Davidson £25 a month for this wee painting, you know, of the nun doing her beads. And I still have it. It's hanging in my bedroom. You know,
I'm just going to be the Philistine here. Well, what's it worth?
Well, it's worth several thousand now. I mean, Colin's one of the top names now.
Yeah.
And he's doing wonderful work, and he's got the, but he's gone in for the,
I'm looking at his work, which, you know, people of course will know the sort of painting that he does. He does faces, and he does them,
yeah,
and he overdoes them as a way of describing it. He's not afraid to bring out a wrinkle or add an extra bit of paint where you mightn't wish a laughter line to be. But I'm looking at Jamie Dornan, the Queen. I'm looking at Liam Neeson, Kenneth Branagh.
Yeah.
I'm looking at Eamon Holmes, David Trimble.
Eamon Malley, as well.
They're just these never-ending list of very, very well-known people that he has painted, and they're incredible, absolutely incredible creations.
They are incredible. Yeah. And yet this one is more in the style that his father used, you know. I think that's my opinion of it. It's before he got into that way of doing things, you know, and so he's a younger artist. But the reality is, it is true, there are times there's times you'll take a notion about a picture and you'll just want it, you know. And there's times then when you think, oh God, are we going broke? Have we stretched the autograph too far, you know? We could take one of these pictures down to Ross's and Oxford and make a bit of money.
Yeah, but don't always think about the money. That's the lesson I've got to teach myself. I certainly wouldn't buy a silver frame with a coat hanger sticking out of it, because that was one of the winners of the Turner Prize. Malachy, I'm going to have to say again.
that artist isn't doing that work for your wall.
Well, this is true. This is true. This is true. I know he's messing about in his garage and he's entering the Turner Prize. And, he's, you know, the bottom line is, that, you know, I could have a rattle at what he's doing and nearly create something like that. I couldn't do what Colin Davidson's doing. And maybe I'm using the wrong judging mechanism. There's a host of callers here. Malachy, thank you. Thank you.
All the best to you, Frank.
Thank you. Malachy O'Doherty here on the U105 phone-in. Barry wants to make a point. Go ahead, Barry.
Hi, Frank, I don't know if you're aware, every Sunday in Merrion Square in Dublin, a lot of professional artists are licensed by Dublin Council to sell their work. You know, there's no commission on the prices. I haven't been down probably in 7 or 8 years. I know it's still going, but some of the work is absolutely fantastic. All types of different artwork and totally original, you know.
When you say totally original, is it something you would want to display in your conservatory or hang in your living room? Or do you just walk past thinking, what's going on in the head of that person?
It has everything, Frank, from what you would call weird paintings just to fantastic artists with landscapes or original types of artwork. The last time I was there, it blew my mind, some of the stuff they had.
You see, I'm a great admirer of people who have skill, and I need to emphasise that time and again. Most art that I see really lifts my spirit and makes me feel envious of those who can do what I cannot do. But when I see someone bend a metal bar and stick a piece of wire out of the end of it and hang some ribbons on it and position it on a plinth and say, oh, you know, this is to be studied and it's quite amazing. I feel like telling them to take it home and throw it in a skip.
You should take a trip down, Frank. Honestly, it's stuff you will buy and treasure for the rest of your life, honestly.
And we're just reminded of the great creative spirit that exists right across Ireland from artists of all shades.
Well, it's been on the go since 1985, every Sunday from 10 o'clock until about 4 or 5 in the afternoon.
Merrion Square in Dublin. Next time I'm around, I must have a proper look. Is there anywhere like that in Northern Ireland that does something that would be handier to get to? Feel free. Do let us know, because we want to encourage artists. We want to praise them. We want to display their wares, and we want to purchase the goods that they deliver and provide. But we also want to challenge them if they're pulling the wool over our eyes. Malachy, what do you think?
Well, Frank, it's actually a very funny subject, because my second name is Turner, and I will gladly draw a wee picture on a napkin and send it in to you, and you can hang it on the wall as an original Turner. The whole thing is a scam, in the sense that I had an old wise uncle when I was a young man, and he told me why all these abstract artifacts are paid, people pay absolute fortunes for, and it goes way back to the 16th century, whereby if you were an aristocrat and you were buying and trading off the sailing boats, and if what happened then was if you were making huge amounts of money and getting huge amounts of money for your stuff, you had to pay tax. So what the aristocracy did then was, instead of paying them money, they asked to be paid in antiques and artifacts. So, in other words, don't be giving me money. Pay me in antiquities and artifacts. There's two big words from a secondary school boy. So what you did was then you paid these people, give them paintings, give them diamonds, give them gold, give them whatever it is, and that's how you get paid for what you did. And that was the law of the land. It then went on to change to gold and wine.
Yeah, but hold on. What has this got to do with the Turner Prize or people putting a Ford Escort into a gallery with a doily on the roof of it?
Well, let me explain to you why. What happens then was, move that on centuries later, you've got lunatics who draw that particular artist you talk about that's done all the portraits. I think they're rubbish, but that's only my opinion. I don't think he can do it properly, but he gets paid a fortune. And the reason why...
Hold on. You're challenging the talent of Colin Davidson.
Yes, I think his work is horrendous. But that's when he
Yeah, but that's your personal opinion. You couldn't do what he does. That's the point I'm making. You couldn't do what he does. I couldn't do what he does. He purposely overpaints the face. He makes it a little more rugged and a little more aggressive than it really is. But that's his skill. That's his style. That's his trademark. The way Terry Bradley is, his skill, style and trademark. But neither of us could lace the boots of Davison or Bradley. But we could do some of the stuff that's in the Turner Prize.
100%. That's ingenuity. Like, I remember when they'd done the bricks in The Hague or something in some big art place in Paris or London, when your woman put a load of bricks down and it was looking like £6 million for them. And I had Brick Easton work at my house at the time, and I says, "You're complaining about me building the wall at £50. Look at this. This is worth £1 million. Some of the stuff is ridiculous. But the point I'm making is, the reason why it's valued at so much money is people back in the old days done it as a swindle against the tax. And if you wind that forward today, people are showing artifacts and saying this is worth a fortune. So you imagine if you got a load of dough and you didn't want to pay tax on it and herdings tax, if you bought a painting or got an artifact with the money of a house sale and then you sold that years later for millions of pounds, you didn't pay tax on it. So it wouldn't matter if you bought a coat hanger sticking out of a cork and somebody said that's worth 10 million, I have it. And the reason you bought it is because you know that if you sell that on, you're not going to pay tax on that.
Yeah, so but I don't understand your argument. If you've purchased the bricks that were displayed in Paris for £1 million, they're worth £1 million. So therefore, whenever the inheritance tax is being adjusted or decided upon by the accountants, they factor in £1 million plus increase in value or decrease in value, as the case may be. But there's still a value on the piece of art when you hand it on to your loved ones. It's still part of the estate.
Oh, I understand, but the point about it is, if you've done a job for someone or you bought something and they paid you an artifact, like, say you said to me, come up here, Mom, paint my house. And I said, you're right, Frank, I'm going to paint your house and it's going to cost £10,000. I'll dig your garden and do everything that happens, right? And I have to put that check into the tax man and I'm going to pay tax on that. And then I'm in your house painting and I see this painting you have on the wall and slowly, and you said to me, that painting's worth about £10,000. And I said, you tell you what, give me that painting instead of paying me cash. And I don't have to put that money through my books, and you go, there you go, well.
Yeah, but that's a form of bartering. That's what that is. That's swapping one service for another item. But eventually, you own a £10,000 painting, and whenever inheritance tax kicks in, you'll have to log it as a £10,000 painting, or unless you're going to hide it in the attic and pretend you don't have it. Then what good is that? But when you do monetize it, you're going to raise the money. And the money's going to show. But there's more to it than trying to diddle a tax man, Malachy. It's got to do with people's creativity. Do you accept that there is a place for abstract art, or do you think people are just doing it because they can't do it properly?
I think they can't do it properly. I had girls who worked for me in my restaurant and they used to do pencil drawings of people. And they were absolutely out of this world. And I love to see pictures of nature and eagles and, you know, some of these girls painted people and things. And I just thought, isn't that absolutely fantastic? And then you go up to the art building in Queens and you look at some of the stuff where somebody's lifted a paint bomb. You know, if that was the case, you could take an armoured car from when I was a kid that we used to fire paint bombs, green, white, and orange paint bombs, and they were plastered, and we used to cheer. If you took one of them armored cars out today and put it in a museum and said, look at the art, look at the way the paint spliced on it, and people are going, isn't that fantastic? Wasn't it a true story that somebody got a monkey and tied a paintbrush onto his tail and let him loose in a blank canvas, and the artist sold it for millions of pounds, and it was a bloody chimpanzee with a paintbrush tied to his tail, splattering paint everywhere. Like, people are insane, man. I would spend £1 million on a Ferrari or a Lamborghini, you know, really flush looking car. I wouldn't give £2 million for a piece of paper with absolute crap on it, or as you say, a coat hanger. However, as an investment, and this is where it all boils down to, if you've got the millions of pounds to buy this rubbish, you're buying that, and in years to come, that's going to be worth more. Not that it's any good. but it's the investment that makes it worth the money.
Is it the only one? Is it because it's the only one on the planet? The, as Malachy said way back at the beginning, Malachy O'Doherty, the original one. She was the first to do it, to put the big doily on the roof of a Ford Escort. And, you know, does that put the value of that Ford Escort, the car's probably worth about £1,000, does that put the value of an old battered Ford Escort through the roof because she's put a lace doily on the roof of it and entered it in the Turner Prize? Ah, it's a crazy world. It really is.